All right, everybody, welcome back. This is the Champion Reads podcast, featured and sponsored by Champion Circle Networking Association. And joining me today, I'll bring them on screen, Mr. Ian Money Sign Sturmer and William the Amazing Blake. I don't know why I went with that. Anyways, it's super great to have everybody back, and I appreciate all of you being here. And also just wanted to wrap up this awesome conversation about outwitting the devil. Again, I wish we could give it more time, but there's so many other great books we got to cover. And we wanted to give our audience just a taste, just an opportunity, and get them excited about this book and all the various lessons that they can receive from it. Today, we're all sitting in the comfort of our homes, in our offices, and sharing just our personal opinions. I should always start with a preface to this, that these are our opinions. You know, we're experts in our own fields, but we're just sharing some thoughts and some insights, as this is a book club podcast where we discuss our own thoughts and takeaways and experiences. And, you know, in the end, we also share maybe some applications and some really cool things that come from a lot of what we do while we read these books. And I think it's just a powerful, powerful way. And before we jump into Outwitting the Devil, I just want to like kind of feel around the room here. Ian, what's it like been for you to read a book, to follow along, and then to also just like share and discuss your own insights to each of these books?
Well, I think definitely when I know I'm going to be talking about it and sharing it, I really think about what I'm reading. So to make an analogy for this book, rather than drift through a book or put it in the background and hope something comes out of it, I know I have to get ideas from it. So it really makes me think a lot more deeply and apply it to my own life more than I really would if I was just listening to it in the car to get from point A to point B.
There's definitely an intentionality behind what books we decide to read and what we hope to discuss. But I love what you said, because it really is an application of learning. I should call you William. William Blake, whatever you want. I call him Willie, everybody. Willie's awesome. You guys get to know him professionally and as a human being. He's amazing. But what are your thoughts on just the discovery that comes from reading books and then discussing them with other people, as far as like this goes from our book club?
I enjoy it a lot personally. And I know that when I read through something, if it's paper, I retain more of it, but I'd say about like 20% of the information I retain. If I'm just listening to it, about 10%. But when we get into discussions like this and talk about the book, talk about the principles and not simply what the author wrote, but life examples, it cements it more in my head. So then I retain 50 to 60 plus percent of the stuff that's going on. And then it gives me also some actionable items to apply to my own life, which then I can do to help others and to help improve myself. So I love doing this. I love sharing ideas back and forth because it grows my perspective. I don't know everything. And at the same time, it just cements what really we're all about and that we're all just wanting to learn.
I love that. And this podcast in and of itself is evolving. So if you're listening to this, wherever you listen to your podcasts, we encourage you and invite you to send us an email to info@mychampioncircle.com. And we would love your feedback. If you want us to read a particular book or discuss a particular topic, let us know. And, you know, we definitely want to cover, you know, many questions or interests that you have. But we typically read bestsellers, books that have motivational, inspirational, self-help backgrounds or business and finance backgrounds. We're looking for those blockbusters that, you know, everyone's heard they should read, but, you know, we're going to do the reading and talk about it ourselves. And there's a few on the list that I've never read, even though I've read, you know, a ton of books. And I actually think that more than I have ever read, and probably Ian combined, that's a bold guess because I don't know what Ian's reading track record is, but I'm pretty sure William has read more books than the two of us combined. He's an avid reader, and I love these conversations with the three of us. And there's more members on our team. This is just the usual three that come on here. So we invite you to participate as our as our guests and as our listeners, we hope that you'll come on and have an opportunity to discuss with us, because we want to find out what you're experiencing as you're reading these books. Or maybe we are your reading. Maybe you don't read or subscribe to Audible and you just want to hear what we have to say so that we become your spark notes for the next quiz and test wherever. But whatever your purposes are, we're just grateful and we're here to discuss. So guys, if you're open to it, let's jump into Outwitting the Devil, Napoleon Hill. And again, this is the third attempt, I'll say, for lack of better words, at just going over this book. And, you know, we typically cover books in 2 to 3 or even 4 segments. And the purpose of our segment at this one is to cover a couple things. One, the last time we got together, we talked about the power of drifting and why the devil uses this tactic. And he reveals it in his interview with Napoleon in an opportunity to expose his tactics and techniques on how he gets people to go into drifting. And we covered a little bit about drifting, and we'll jump right on into this. So one of the things we want to talk about today is the seeds of fear and how the devil uses that, followed by this principle called definiteness of purpose, which Napoleon uses in a lot of his books, and we'll talk about that. And then we also want to talk about the power of self-discipline and then anything else that follows. So that's kind of on the agenda for today. And we'll start by just kicking it off. And if you don't mind, Ian, I'll start us off. Sorry, guys, I'm dealing with some allergies. So I literally, if you're watching the video format, I just picked my nose. Didn't mean to, but I'm going to take this off the screen here. And when Willie gets back, we'll have him join the screen as well. But I want to start with this idea of seeds of fear, because again, the one thing we've learned from this book, if you take away anything, it's that the devil uses this technique of causing people to go into drifting through hypnotic rhythm. And hypnotic rhythm is just kind of like a hypnosis way of convincing you that you're doing good things, that you're aware of everything that's happening, and that you have the ability and full control and reins of your life. When in reality, you are drifting along as a follower, as a consumer, and as somebody who has not had full control to think for themselves, agency to decide and do what you want to do, and also to have control over your life. And that's his technique. He slips that in there, and he uses this to control many, many people. And in this case, in this book, he talks about the 98%. 98% of 7+ billion people and all people in existence to this little rock here in our universe. That's amazing. And whether you believe it or don't, it's a scenario, right? It's just an opportunity to discuss a potential theory or explanation of things. But in many ways, this is a really cool principle. So the devil uses this idea of the seeds of fear. And the seeds of fear will keep you in lock as a drifter, because he plants these seeds of, man, if I leave this organization, how will I be thought of? If I do this, maybe I won't be able to provide for my family. If I do X, Y, or Z, there's some sort of imaginative and unknown fear of what's happening or what will happen if I change my current trajectory or my current actions and habits. Those are some of the greatest, like we're talking ninth inning, last pitch. This is what the devil uses to keep us stationary and drifting with the herd mentality. And I think it's bogus. It's crazy, because anything that scares you should motivate you to do exactly what you think you shouldn't in many cases, not like jumping off a bridge or anything like that. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about, like, you have a fear of public speaking. Well, go find a way to speak, face that fear. I'm talking about, you know, the things that you might be nervous, like introducing yourself to somebody or getting that interview or taking that promotion or whatever it might be, you might want to consider doing the thing that fears that brings you fear, because that will ultimately help you conquer that fear. Anyways, I could talk on and on about this, but The Seeds of Fear is like the ninth inning ballpark chance that the devil uses to keep us in our drifting states. And we also talked about the inception of drifting, how even though the 2% are non-drifters, we all still have those things in our lives that we drift on versus the things that we don't drift on. So let's talk about that, Seeds of Fear. Any comments from the crew here on how fear can keep us complacent without actually making progress? We'll start with Ian.
Yeah. Fear is really interesting because it's ethereal. Quite often the fear is not something solid and tangible. When I was younger, I had a good friend who was making some decisions in her life, what she wanted to do, and her parents disagreed. So they said that her father actually said he was going to disown her. And I was close with her at the time. I was really worried about that. I was very worried for her, what was going to happen. And it was really eating me up. And this went on for a couple of weeks. And then she called me one day and says, yeah, my father disowned me. I thought, okay, now that that happened, that was it. It was not anywhere near what my mind created it to be. So I think a lot of times fear is just there. It's not rational. You know, the worst case scenario is usually not as bad as what we think is going to happen or what is just in the back of our mind for this fear. So often we get this, you know, it's a fight or flight idea. And we get stuck in the middle. If we actually fought that fear, it might be pretty easy. But instead, we not necessarily run away from it, but we just get paralyzed in our mind about this fear. And we end up not doing anything when if we just actually looked at the fear, looked at the situation, it's probably not nearly as bad as what we're afraid of in our mind instead of that reality. So maybe the first step is to look at that situation. You know, if you're afraid of public speaking, the worst thing that's going to happen when you get up there is probably not really that scary if you actually look at it. So that was my thought.
I love that. And Willie, jump in if you have anything to add, but I tested, oh, go ahead, Willie. And then I'll share a Facebook post that I shared the other day.
Yeah. If I could jump in quick, Ian spot on. I think of the first time I was public speaking before I fell in love with it after experiencing it a lot. That I was like, I was so scared. I was scared that everyone was going to judge me, that the world was going to end, that everyone was just going to basically just be like, oh, William is this, William's that. But in reality, it was like, yeah, it was a talk to the congregation. So I gave a talk. Some people came up to me and said, hey, that was good. When I'm like, yeah, that's pretty terrible. I read word from word from the paper that I wrote the whole thing down on. And it's just funny how fear does that. And I remember one thing from my childhood as a quick addition is that fear, it's always inside of us. What we think is fear is the physical, tangible thing in front of us. But in reality, the fear is just our emotions mixed with experiences that we've had in the past. So the acronym analogy, the one where it has like a word to each letter, it's like false evidences appearing real. So it's really just false things that aren't necessarily reality. It's just our own experience and our own emotions mix into it, appearing as that's what's going to happen. And when I thought about it that way, and when I thought about fear is inside of me, so no matter what, I'm always going to be bigger than fear. And if I'm bigger than fear, well, then I just need to take a little step further past it. And usually when that happens, I don't feel it anymore. And it's like, do this. I tell this to my kids. It's just like, do the scary thing first, and then you can be scared. It's the seeds of fear that we plant. It's not simply in that moment. It's in the past as well. But the devil uses it so many times, just planting things here and things there, when you could take Ian, what Ian said, and say, yeah, just actually look at the situation. What's the extreme? You're going to die. Sure. That's probably not going to happen. Not realistic. Realistic with public speaking. Yeah, it might not be good and people aren't going to remember it. Does that sound so bad? Not really. So when you look at it, like Ian said, with just the sense of what's actually going to happen, it can dissipate. I hope that's the right word. Distinguish, dissolve what we thought was real to actually help us move forward.
I love all that. Thank you for that. And Ian, thank you as well for what you said. You guys got me thinking, and I didn't plan to this, but I posted this about 2 weeks ago, and the answers made me laugh, smile, kind of question, you know, why am I friends with this person? You know, kind of, there were so many different reasons, but I think it's really interesting because when you talk about fear, it's exactly as the both of you described. And most people are fearing this unknown. And what scares people the most is what they don't know. And it cripples them. And I put out a Facebook post. And if you aren't following either three of us on Facebook, shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. I never put shame on people. But please come and interact with us on social media. But on Facebook, I put a post out there. And it was a meme. And I'll just kind of share my screen. You guys can scroll around with me. But I thought this was interesting because – when it comes to fear, and I can't see my screen now, so unmute and let me know if you can see my screen. It should say when one door closes. Can you guys see that?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, awesome, cool. It took me to a different screen, so I can't look at what I'm looking at. But anyways, when it comes to fear, you know, a lot of people wonder, like, would I jump through the next open door? What's on the other side of that unknown? And I thought I would put a question out there, and it says, when one door closes, another door blank. And I asked people to fill in the blank. And some of these questions, and I'll just skim through some of them, are absolutely interesting and hilarious. And I know some people were joking, but some people were interesting. One person said, we'll open. One door will open. Another friend said, we'll show you that there's more than one door. Yeah, that's cool. Another person said, it's you in... it's in your own way. That's funny. I won't swear on here. Another person says another door will hit you in the face, making you realize that success does not really involve doors. You know, people are being silly with it. Another person said, open, your house is haunted. Call me. I'm a realtor and I can help. That's my friend Liz. Willie commented on this and said, another door can close too. That's the beauty. There's a million doors. We choose which ones we look at. I love that, Willie. So thank you. And there's just a bunch of others. And so many people commented, both the doomsday comments, both the positive and inspirational comments, and the others were like just the hopelessness comments. And I thought this was very interesting. Some people even put like, becomes the teleportation machine, and like, we're really silly with it. So it was really entertaining for me to share this. And I thought it would be kind of funny because at the end of the day, fear is just an idea. And as you described, Willie, it's also that acronym, you know, it's false evidence appearing real. And I think that's powerful. Any other last comments about fear? And we'll move on to some other cool stuff too.
Yeah, I might be moving ahead of where we're going, but kind of realize that the antidote to fear is action. And sometimes it's a tiny action. And there's two real quick examples. I went parasailing one time. And when I started sitting in a little boat and going forward, I was terrified. I don't really mind heights, but I do have a big fear of falling. And parasailing was something you could fall in. And I was terrified until we got about 5 feet in the air. And after that, I just loved the view and it was great. That tiny action was all it took. A similar one, just real quick, I was in a job interview one time for sales and I was younger and a bit more shy. And as I was explaining how I could go talk to people, the interviewer said, well, you seem kind of shy. I said, well, you know, I adapted the situation. He goes, oh, okay, go introduce yourself to that guy. And it was a guy who was just walking down the hall. And almost paralyzed with fear, but I stood up and I took those first two steps, then I was fine. And the fear was gone after those first steps. So again, rather than let that fear paralyze you, a simple step was, you know, the fear was gone. And that was before I reached the point that I should have been scared, which is either being in the air or talking to the person. So take a step, just one step, even before you hit the fear points. And it's amazing how much that fear just dissipates and you realize it's, I'm going to say ethereal again, rather than real.
Man, I think that opened up a whole, yeah, I love that. That's awesome. And I would also add to that, like, imagine if you could develop the muscle of facing fears when you come across them, addressing the crazy, monstrous elephant in the room, when you are starting to feel that fear and you became so adequately prepared and armored to take that on. I think that's just so powerful. And that's how you exit from the drifting phase. And you know, it's an opportunity to be someone who is in command and control of their own lives, their own thoughts, their own feelings, their own actions, and so much more. But speaking of things that help combat drifting, hypnotic rhythm, and the seeds of fear, let's talk about this concept called the definiteness of purpose. And you know what's interesting? When I first read this book, I was talking to William on the phone one day, and he showed me this quote that absolutely changed my life. And it easily has become one of my favorite quotes of all time. And then after he showed this to me, having been a student of Napoleon Hill and Think and Grow Rich and all of the other works of Napoleon Hill and the Nap Hill Foundation, I started to recognize this terminology called definiteness of purpose. And I'll put it here in the, I'll put it on a banner so we can see it, so just so that you don't misunderstand my crazy Western accent here. But I definitely want to share that there's a really cool quote, and not to steal anyone's thunder, but to allow anyone to build off of this. The quote is that you never leave unfinished thoughts in the mind. Be definite in everything you do. And I think I just reversed those two. I think I just mixed them up. But it's be definite in everything you do. Never leave unfinished thoughts in the mind. And that has always stuck with me, because the second we put things out in the future, the second we put things in perspective or delay or procrastinate or do any one of those things, we allow hypnotic rhythm and the deception through drifting to settle in, and we've become immune to that process. And that is one of those things that keeps us from achieving our definite purposes, because we can all agree that we're here on this earth for greater purposes than just to live, breathe, to have a working organism of a body and to exist. We are not here to exist. We are here to make something of ourselves. That's what I believe. And I think I'm not alone on that. So what do you guys think about this definiteness of purpose, its definition, and just thoughts about that? Go ahead, William.
Yeah, I'm with you all along with that. And I love that quote, be definite in everything you do and never leave unfinished thoughts in the mind. It happens so often with all of us. And the one thing that I know I didn't realize at first was when I push thoughts to future Willie, future Willie is already going to deal with a bunch of stuff and I'm piling it on him. So future thoughts can be I know I was with my spouse laying in bed one night and she says, hey, when are we going to get the ding in the car fixed? And I'm like, I don't want to deal with that right now. That's for future Willie to deal with. And then it was like, what are we going to eat for tomorrow? And I was like, oh, we can solve that in the morning. And just like a few other thoughts kept going. And it's funny because it's true. I know this because I have had conversations and people have the same conversations with their spouses and kind of throw it on their future self. But then when the future comes, it piles on. And think of it like a Thanksgiving dinner when you're putting food on the plate and your plate gets full, but you're only like a quarter way through the line. And then you're like, oh, I got to get the rolls on there. Oh, I got to get like some turkey. I got to get the stuffing. Oh, they brought like 50 different kinds of Jell-O. I got to get a couple of those on. And you soon realize that your plate is so full that you're either going to have it go everywhere because you put so much on it, or you're going to have to leave and then come back, which in relation to our lives, we don't want to leave what we're doing and have to come back to it, right? We don't want to leave the dream job that we've been wanting to do. And instead of putting down a little grind for a couple months or a year, we're just like, I'm going to go get married, have kids, nothing against that, right? But go off, get married, have kids, and then come back. And you're like, this is going to be like 3 years when I'll come back. But because we put it off, then it's just like 6, 10, maybe like 20 years down the road where we have to get it. When if we just put a little bit more of definite of purpose in, which is basically more intention, then we could have gotten it as well as everything else. And so I know something that I've learned from being definite is if the thought is going to take you less than a minute to decide, which is like 98% of thoughts, just make the decision then. Because then your brain starts working not in what can I do or how is this going to work, but it turns into how am I going to make this work in our life right now, right? It goes from the what if I can't do this to the how can I do it.
I love that. If I can build on a little bit of what you said there, the future Willy thing I love, because when we have a fear, we like to pass it on. And in reality, fear only exists when the object of the fear is there for you. An elephant could step on me and kill me, and that's really kind of a scary thing. But I've never really been afraid of elephants stepping on me. But I can guarantee you that if I was standing right next to one, that fear would be in my mind. So as we get closer to those fears, then they become big. And I think a lot of times those fears in the back of my mind, we keep pushing off to future Willy, because I'm going to give you all my fears in the future, because I know you exist then. public speaking, well, as long as I'm not supposed to speak somewhere, it doesn't matter if I'm afraid of public speaking. If I'm not going to be in an airplane, it doesn't matter if it's going to crash somebody else, not to me. So that pushing off the things so that we don't have to experience that fear closer. A lot of times we push away from it. We make decisions to avoid being in that position. And I guess with that, there's a quote that I'm going to claim credit for it because I don't know where it came from. But if your fear of failure is greater than your desire for success, you're going to live in fear. You'll never become successful. So that definite purpose, do you have a purpose of what you want to do? Is your desire to stand in front of a group and share your wisdom greater than your fear of saying a wrong word and everyone hating you? Is your desire to travel to Zimbabwe greater than your fear of flying or being stepped on by an elephant? As your desire for it, that definiteness of purpose grows and becomes solidified in your mind, that becomes more powerful than the fear that we had of that unknown amorphous ideas in the back of our head. So the closer you get to your object, the more you have that desire and that definiteness, those fears become irrelevant because that goal you want, that desire for success, becomes so much stronger.
And John, if I can add quickly along with that, also when it comes to that definite of purpose, it's interesting how when you put your mind to something, you come up with solutions so much quicker. And even your subconscious brain, while you're sleeping, can come up with ideas. And that's a whole nother conversation and a whole nother like science and everything to it. But I know I've experienced it when I've put my mind to the coaching business I've worked on to other businesses to networking groups to really just like what I want, it's been easier than when I pushed it off. So to make this more relatable to the people in their 20s, because, you know, that's just where I'm sitting at. I was so definite in wanting to have a wife when I was in my 20s. And I'm like, I want a wife and this is what I want in her. So I went out and just had a lot of fun. And then God put her in my hands. And then a couple of years down the road, we're like, we want kids. And so God provided a way for us to have kids as well as to be able to provide for them. And it's just so interesting that whenever I've come into a situation in my life where I just say, this is what I want. And if it's not against your plan, God, because I believe in a God, then he just brings it to me. And I know it talks about the you can believe in the universe, or I think I don't think it's supreme, higher intelligence is what it uses in the book. But when you put it out there, it comes back so much easier than if we just keep it inside ourselves with hoping and dreaming, because that's where it's going to stay if we keep it inside. But when we share it, that's when it becomes a goal. That's when it becomes the reality that we want. So, John, I'll turn it back over to you.
No, I love that. I'm so glad you added that. And a couple of things you touched on. Number one, yeah, in multiple references, it's higher intelligence or infinite intelligence that he talks about. And he doesn't just talk about it in this book. He talks about it in like Think and Grow Rich and The Principles of Success and so many other of his books. It's such a revolutionary but yet universal concept. And then the other thought too is this definiteness of purpose, got to say it right, appears in also many of his works. And it's not just happening in this quote unquote interview with the devil, but it's a value. It is probably a foundation of life. And I got to geek out for just a second. And I know we're short on time. So what's time clock, guys? We've got about 10 minutes left to wrap this up. But I got to geek out with you. And I promised I wouldn't do this. So I'm not breaking my promise. I'll stay away from it. These guys are shaking their head. It's awesome. Since I've dove into this, I've done some research on various topics as well, because I want to do everything in my willpower to avoid drifting in every aspect of my life. So I've looked into things and I've done some research. But let's go back for just 2 seconds to the seeds of fear, because there's a concept that you guys probably are aware of, and it makes sense, but there's a concept called generational fear. And quick story, 30 seconds. There was a tribe or a species of penguin in the Antarctic that was down there, and it was the general belief of this little tribe of penguins, I don't know what they're officially called or whatever, that if you go over this hill, that there is nothing good there. It's kind of like the Lion King, like everything the light touches is our kingdom, except for that darkness over there. That is the elephant graveyard. You must never go there, right? That's kind of how this penguin tribe or flock or whatever they're called, community, believed. And they would never, ever go over there. And I think maybe sometime in the history of this group, one went over the hill and never came back. And that's why they believed that. And so for generations, like 3, 4, 5 generations of hatching egglings, little babies, and they growing up, and then they hatch their egglings, and then they grow up. And I know I just made up a new word called egglings, but just going down like 5 generations, this tribe or this group of penguins continued to believe that if they crossed over that hill, that nothing good would happen and they wouldn't return. And it was one day that some scientists took a few of them over the hill and released them. And they went back over the hill to tell the group that, oh my gosh, there's all this real estate available to us. We could have just been going over this hill this whole time. And all of a sudden, the tribe of penguins expanded. It grew because they now had more real estate and more territory to expand on and work with. And I just want to share with you, I know I took 3 minutes on this. I said 30 seconds. Wrapping this up, the seeds of fear may not even be your fault. And I want you to recognize this. If you're listening to this right now, it may not be your fault. It could be something that your ancestors have passed down for generations. And that's why what Willie and what Ian and what we've said here could be transformational for you. If you operate on a definiteness of purpose lifestyle, you can break the seeds of fears that have been in your life, your genealogy, your entire existence, and your family's existence for a long time. And that's why it's important to be of yourself, which leads into our next point. Because another thing, and a great thing that we can use to combat a lot of this drifting and this hypnotic rhythm, is self-discipline. And Ian actually wanted to talk a little bit about not just self-discipline, but self-awareness. And I think both go hand in hand. But I'll just lead off and say self-discipline, once you get into the motion of being definite in what you do and not putting yourself in procrastinating ideas and thoughts and actions and it affecting your life and your lifestyle, as Willie described earlier, you will then decide when you will progress in your life, and you'll get so good at it that you'll progress constantly at accelerated rates because of your ability to make those commanding choices in your life. It's like being the captain of your own boat and sailing the seas as if you've been out there for years and knowing what to do and how to sail amongst the wind and follow them stars. So I'll just lead off with that. But would anyone like to comment on self-discipline as a way to combat drifting, or talk about the self-awareness piece of that? Go ahead, Ian, you're unmuted.
Yeah. So as you were talking about the whole penguin thing, it reminded me of a related analogy that I'll tie into all this. For years and years and years, people believed that you could not run a mile in less than 4 minutes. So John, I know being an athlete, you probably know that that's possible. You may have run one in less than four. I never have, but it's possible. So is a 2 minute mile possible? I don't know. What is the limit of what's ever possible? We don't know now. Probably a 1 minute mile we may never reach, but I don't know where that line is. And as long as I can say, you know what, I don't know what's possible until we try it, or until somebody in better shape than me tries it. Every few years, someone breaks the record for the mile, does it faster and faster. So there's kind of two sides. First of all, you got a mental side of self-awareness and realize that there's no physical line of 4 minute mile that cannot physically be broken. We don't know where the line is. So theoretically, it will always get faster and faster. And then there's the much harder part. Once you've realized that anything is possible in your mind, you got to go out there and do it. I will never break the 4 minute mile if I don't go out and start running on the track and really practicing and changing a lot of habits that I should change anyways. So self-discipline really is, to tie back to my point earlier, taking those first steps. Take the step against fear to realize that you can conquer it, that it's not as big as you thought. And each step you take, and the more you focus on those steps, the more you're in control. You're making those steps. You're not being dictated by that amorphous fear in the back of your mind. So.
I love that. And I remember the first time I heard that story of the first person that broke the 4 minute mile, because no one did it before. And there was just this, it wasn't even the physical line. It was, like you said, the mental line of, yeah, you can't do the 4 minute, you can't break 4 minutes running a mile. Then someone did it. And the best thing is that after that, within, I think, weeks, maybe even days, there were several other people that then broke the 4 minute mile. And so always begs the question, what can we do if we believe big enough? We can do a lot. And I always love to leave with like actual items, like steps. So I just say, for those who are listening, and then I'll leave it to John for his words of wisdom, super wise man there, is the first thing is to come up with what desire you have. What is your desire? The second one, set a goal. Set a goal that you want with it. And don't set it small, set it massive. Because you want to set a massive goal But then three, you want to start doing small actions towards it, because it's those small actions that get you there. I know from a father of young kids, they love to dump goldfish all in our living room. And I think it's just the biggest mess ever. I don't know how I'm going to clean it up. But by the end of it, I always do. And it's by picking up one goldfish at a time. So in your guys' life, for those who are listening, and I know I'm speaking for myself as well, what's that one goldfish that you can pick up today? And what's the next one you could pick up tomorrow? So simply have that desire, set a massive goal that you really want to achieve, and then start doing the small steps to get there. Because the small steps and that clarity is what gets you past the fear to then be able to achieve what you desire.
Man, I love that. I just feel like we haven't done this in a while. So thank you for one, Willie, giving us actionable items. And in those action items, I think we've proven a point that there is some actionable accomplishments that come from making a different decision. So you get awarded the truth bomb for the day. Here you go. All right, that was awesome. Okay, awesome. Let's wrap today's show up by just saying thank you again for all the contributions and your incredible discussions. I've learned a lot, and thank you for allowing me to step on my pedestal. And also, I appreciate your values, because oftentimes we share a diverse group of knowledge, tapping into infinite intelligence. We, as a team, highly recommend you pick up a copy of Outwitting the Devil. This concludes our conversation on Outwitting the Devil, and we highly recommend you go and learn more about it and send us your feedback. Send it to info@mychampioncircle.com, where we'll be able to respond and, you know, read your letters over the air here, and we're happy to include that. Also, next month, we're going to be covering, and I'm just going to go ahead and pick it, but that's the last time I get to pick, because I've picked like the last three in a row, and Ian's like, come on, man. And so we're going to go with The Four Agreements, and that book is by Don Miguel Ruiz. Yeah, look at that. I love this book. It is such a fantastic book, and let me just give you a little insight about it. In The Four Agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz reveals the source of self-limiting beliefs that rob us of joy and create needless suffering. Based on ancient Toltec wisdom, the Four Agreements offer a powerful code of conduct that can rapidly transform our lives to a new experience of freedom, true happiness, and love. I'll leave it at that, because we're short on time and I don't want to give it away. And we might be able to cover this in one or even two segments. It's a short read. You'll love it. It's an absolutely incredible, mind-blowing, number one bestseller on the New York Times charts, and you're absolutely going to love it. So, team, thank you so much for your support and awesomeness today, and we'll see you next time on the Champion Reads podcast, where we talk about bestsellers and incredible books that you might be interested in, but most importantly, that will lead you to take inspired action, as Willie described today as we wrapped up this call. We thank you very much, and we'll see you next time on the show.